You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of August 17th, 2022, and this week I'm dragging my family to the digital library.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Alborth.
My name is Scott Juster.
And this is a serious but not humorous conversation about video games. Man, you gotta really bring the kids to the modern era. It is
By bringing them to the past.
By bringing them a link to the past, if you will. We're talking a little bit about... We had a side conversation before we started the podcast that, honestly, we probably should have just recorded because it was basically a podcast chat.
Yeah.
But we'll get back into it. In a more natural way, you are sharing with me that Sam, your son, who has started kindergarten today, you decided to play, for whatever reason, A Link to the Past. And we'll talk about guides and the history stuff in a bit, but talk to me about why A Link to the Past. Like, how did this come up? Was he like, Dad, I really want to play an old Zelda game?
Yeah, my ongoing quest to make my children the coolest kids in school.
Yes.
I'm now dragging them into video games that came out in 1992. I think, how did it even start?
He knows about I was talking to a friend of mine recently about this too, because I know we've done a podcast about how to raise your, you know, kids in a gaming world, but I think we recorded that years ago, certainly before I had a child. Yeah. Like, was that a factor in this? Like, when you were going into it, were you thinking, all right, son, you have come of age. Now is the time. Like, genuine question, do you have like a roadmap of games that you want Sam to play before he's like X age?
I selfishly did have somewhat of a roadmap because what we wanted, well, it's tough because video games are hard.
They sure are.
Even simple video games that we don't think about as difficult require either a level of dexterity where you need to be able to press multiple buttons at the same time, or you need to be able to effectively play the game without looking at the controller, or you need to be able to read to be able to play it or read competently. And so I think it makes it trickier as to what to play with, like a range, you know, with a family.
Yeah.
And depending on what age the kids are, but we've been playing the same games for a while, and so I just wanted to play something new, and I wanted to play something different from what he was interested in. And one thing that worked really well, I don't know, a year or 2 years ago almost, was I actually started playing Super Mario Brothers on the NES with him, and then took him through a few Mario games, and then I introduced Mario Maker. And then because he had at least a couple hours of each Mario game, and then...
So you started with Super Mario Brothers.
I did, because I wanted him to... I knew he would love Mario Maker, but he would get so much more out of it if he understood the different tile sets and just the importance of how each one was different. And it blew his mind. Like, when... in the same way that it kind of blew our minds when we first got Mario Maker. We were like, holy shit, those maniacs did it, you know? And he had a similar response where he knew what they were. Like, he would see the things on the screen. He'd be like, oh, that's the question mark block. What? That's the question mark block. And I'm like, yes, it is. Like, we did it. You know, we now can memorize these things and they have meaning because you've played the other games. And so anyway, all that is to say that eventually we want to play Breath of the Wild together, but I think he will appreciate it a lot more if he has at least some grounding in the other Zelda games.
I have so much respect for this intent, you know?
Yeah.
Because I've given a little bit of thought, but I guess at some point... Because how old was Sam when you introduced him to Super Mario Brothers?
I don't know. Maybe he was like close to 4? I forget. It was something... Yeah. It was young. He was pretty young, but like... And again, remember, this was like... born of the pandemic, you know, and so like we had to kind of audible as to like what we were going to do period with media.
That's a
you know,
it's a very good point. Yes.
Yeah.
Spending a lot more time indoors, I guess.
Exactly. So yeah. Like we had to kind of accelerate our plans for what we were going to expose him to.
So what's next on the docket then? I mean, if you're working towards Breath of the Wild, are you going to do Ocarina or Majora's Mask?
I am. So we just started playing A Link to the Past, and because he's at that point where like he actually can read now, and he's
still quite young though. I mean, I think I was probably older when I was playing these games.
I think so for myself too, but I also wasn't playing it with an adult. And so I didn't have that leg up of like, you know, kind of having someone to explain a couple things to me or like explain a system that wasn't, that's the other thing. Those old games are not super user friendly mm-hmm. in terms of teaching you things. And so it's nicer to have someone that knows what they're doing. So I'll see how far we get in Link to the Past, because he understands puzzles and he understands like inventories, and now he can understand the kind of written puzzles that are out there too. So like, I think he will like it, and it's a cool, like it's a good sized adventure game, you know, like where it's not a massive, huge open world, but like it's different than a side scroller. And so it's kind of his first time being exposed to something like that.
How is he liking it?
I think he's liking it okay. We just got out to, we finally got dumped into the open world. So like that mm-hmm. game starts with a kind of a more linear opening. And then at a certain point you get dumped out and the Zelda music starts up and you're like, okay, this is where the game starts, you know?
Yeah.
And I think he's liking it so far. It's different than like a lot of the stuff that he's played in terms of like the perspective and crawling through the dungeons and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that any of his experiences with more modern games have colored it? Because I feel like one of the, you know, when I was having this conversation recently,
yeah,
we were talking about whether or not the aesthetic would turn you off right off the
yeah.
bat. If you're
yeah.
used to those more modern ones, right? Mm-hmm. And it almost being easier to, you know, because you mentioned starting with Super Mario Brothers,
yeah.
where there's no expectations, right? Like Sam's yeah. wouldn't be going into that with the expectation that it look a particular way.
Yes.
But he has seen and played, you know, the new Mario Brothers games and
yes.
beautiful rendered 3D worlds, right?
Yeah.
A Link to the Past is, I mean, it has aged quite a bit, right? Like you cannot yeah. look at that game and not realize that's the case. For you and I, what we see is just systems, but do you get that sense that he's looking past that? I mean, maybe he's still young enough where it doesn't matter.
It might be. And one of the other things that has been interesting to see is, like, for whatever reason, he's been wanting to play a lot of Super Mario World lately, the Super mm. Nintendo version.
Yeah.
And the Mario game that we had been playing prior to that was Super Mario Galaxy. And so, like, those are two wildly different looking games. I mean, Mario Galaxy, the version of Mario Galaxy on the Switch is incredible looking. I mean, like, that game ages so well. But he's just gone back to World quite a bit. And so I feel like maybe the fact that there's just been a mix of things, it hasn't been exclusively modern games, probably softens that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wonder what would happen if I just like purely experimental, I went a different route with Atsy and was just like hardcore JRPGs, you know, and just see what kind of gamer we raise.
Starting from the original Final Fantasy 1.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like raising our kids intentionally in an experimental way, you tapping into like specific older games, you know, or just shooters. It was just like fucking Doom and...
You're starting with Wolfenstein. Here we go.
See what happens.
I think the older games are certainly less forgiving, which is a stark reminder when you start playing them. Because he'll be like, "Oh, Dad, can you get through this level for me on Super Mario World?" Mm-hmm. And at first, I'm like, "Well, maybe can I?" Like, I haven't been, you know, these games really didn't coddle you, and that stuff has been a wake up call actually in terms of like how forgiving or not forgiving some of the systems are.
Yeah, when we were over at your house during that visit, we were playing some Mario Brothers, and I was like, I am rusty, dude. Like, And I felt it's weird because I felt bad, right? Because like Sam would bobble up to like get past the hard part, and then I can't carry you. I'm sorry, I failed you.
It is a we are reaching a sweet spot where his motor skills and also his cognitive skills are reaching a point where a lot of different games are now much more feasible than they used to be, which is cool to see. So the other thing that I was doing for Link to the Past was, and again, the game doesn't really teach you very much about how to play, you know, it doesn't painstakingly walk you through the menus and the systems and stuff. And so I was describing to him, well, in the Dark Ages, games used to come with these little books, and these little books would have, sometimes they'd have the story in them, or they'd have,
sometimes not so little.
And that was kind of what put me down this path where I was like, they would tell you the rules of the game, and they'd maybe tell you the different items or, you know, abilities you have or the characters, blah, blah, blah. And so I started, you know, just, I wanted to show them an example of like what the Link to the Past instruction manual looked like, because it's a great instruction manual. It has this whole huge story in it, you know, multi-page background of like The Legend of Zelda, and then a bunch of custom art in it. And I ended up on archive.org, where I found that a group of very dedicated nerds have been very high quality digitizing old instruction manuals, including Link to the Past. So I kind of walked him through it, and I was like, okay, like this is the lantern we just got. Like, you can see how it looks here, but like it looks different than in the game, right? Because the game had different graphics, and like this is like an artistic representation of it. So it was kind of a cool little... not only are you learning about how to play the game, you're kind of learning about the context of how this game was played at the time.
Yeah. It's such a cool and weird idea, right? Because, you know, having been in that era, I think we saw the books getting smaller and smaller.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. But,
you know, one of the things I was thinking about when we were having this conversation earlier was the idea of this, like, secondary object that is really more about extending the world building experience outside of the game.
Yes.
Right. Which is that ideal guide, right? Or the ideal like book that comes with it. You know, whenever I played RPGs as a kid, I would often buy like the Brady Games guide, right? Yeah. So like Final Fantasy VIII, I bought the guide, Final Fantasy VII, I bought the guide, so on and so forth. And the guides were really cool because not only did they help you sort of beat certain bosses, but in a lot of ways, and especially that I understand now as, you know, someone that is approaching 40 that still loves D&D and video games and all of that, is it acted like a, almost like a tourist guidebook more than like a gaming guidebook, right? It was more of like a monster manual. You know, I was on archive.org looking at Final Fantasy VIII enemies, and it's just, or summons as well. And it's just so easy to forget the way that those books laid them out was almost more like a Pokedex than it was for something that was actually something useful, right? Yeah. The reality is very rarely, even as a kid, did I find myself stuck and have to like comb through and, okay, page 62 is where I can find this fire dragon. For the most part, you actually don't have an issue playing or needing to look it up for most of those games.
Yeah.
But for me, it was more of like a fan extension, you know?
Yeah, yes. I mean, the it was also a weird... turning point of the internet, you know, a lot of that stuff happened either pre World Wide Web or before the, you know, before Eternal September or whatever, you know, like before it became ubiquitous. And so sometimes the only place that I would be able to get that extended fiction were those strategy guides or instruction manuals, or, I mean, it's probably the reason I kept subscribed to Nintendo Power for so long, because they had that art and those posters, and they would give you a strategy guide every year for renewing your subscription or whatever. Like, that was the only way I could get some of that stuff until the web stuff came more online and I got more savvy about navigating it.
I remember the one that sticks out in my mind so much was Lunar Silver Star Story Complete.
Man.
Or maybe Lunar 2, which was like a 4-disc JRPG with like 15 different endings.
Yeah.
And it came with like a gem, like a necklace that you could wear. And the booklet was the book manual itself was thick and had extra art. It was sort of faux leather, black with a silver like bookmark.
Yeah,
I mean, man, like it was such a cool thing to like bust that out and see. I mean, I think at one point I remember thinking like, should I wear this necklace? But even when I was like 9 years old, I knew that that was way too nerdy and I could not pull that off. But it was really cool to have that additional thing. I imagine from Sam's perspective, what sense did you get from him? Did it seem like he was interested in it, or did he just see it as like a guide? Or
he is I think he is. Well, I mean, the other thing about kids is that they're just obsessive. Like, I feel like kids, yeah, by their nature, yeah, are obsessive. And so once he gets into something, he wants to see that in all other forms of media. You know, he wants to read a book about Mario. He wants to, you know, see Mario in various video games. You know, God help us if he ever... if he ever understands that the Super Mario Brothers Super Show is on Netflix, you know, like that would blow his mind. So I think I could tell after showing, he didn't quite understand the Zelda thing until I just scrolled through the instruction manual with him. But then he realized, oh, like this is kind of like those other video game, you know, manuals or art books or whatever that we have in the house where it's showing you things that don't necessarily look like the game, but they're representative of what you're playing in the game. And so he kind of started to understand it at that point. Also the Zelda manual specifically has like several hundred, if not several thousand words at the very beginning, just like talking about the genesis of Hyrule. Like they start with like the three gods came down and created the earth and the water and the sky. And I'm like, whoa, like this is wild for like, because they don't even touch on that stuff in the game, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at the manual right now. Actually, I pulled it up on the Internet Archive. Yeah, the art is so cool. Yeah, the Legends of Hyrule, Gates of the Golden Land.
And it's like, what? Gates of the what? You know, and like, they don't... They, in the game, they drop you into the game pretty quickly. Like, they drop you into action where it's like, hey, this thing is happening right now. You need to go to the castle and figure this out. They don't have this huge prologue. And so... But having read this as a kid, it gives that stuff more meaning. And so I think that's also part of like how those games expanded in our minds to be bigger than perhaps what they are on the screen.
Yeah, you had mentioned the need to sort of have a baseline imagination for what the story they're talking about is.
Yeah.
So that when you're looking at the, you know, the few pixels that they have to represent it, yes, that in your imagination... It's so much greater. One of the things that strikes me about the art in this, especially in the opening pages of this, is it is kind of dark and serious, you know? Yeah. Like the coming of the wizard art, and I know this is an audio format, so listeners can't see it, but it's this sort of dark red wizard with his, you know, bluish hands raised up in a threatening sign. It reminds me a lot of like old Dungeons and Dragons artists.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. It's kind of it's a weird combo of kind of that like 1980s D&D style and like 1980s/1990s anime style.
Yeah.
Which itself was inspired by that sort of D&D, you know, just kind of darker fantasy style.
Right. What were you looking up in the guide out of curiosity that you had to bring it up? Or was this something that you were interested in showing him?
I was trying to explain to him about? Oh, you know what I was trying to explain to him? We were trying to figure out how to, it was something about a menu. Like we were trying to figure out like how do you modify how to look at the map, or how do you, something about like choosing items or something like that. Like it was a logistical thing. And I was like, well, I could Google this, but then I could also tell him like, this is the sort of game that isn't really going to tell you how to do things. And so back in the olden days, there was a book that would have these instructions in them. And he wasn't quite like, I mean, understandably so, he was like, what? Like, what do you mean there was a book? And so I went looking for it. And I was like, oh, okay. So like, here's how you press X to get to the map and you use the shoulder buttons to move it or whatever. But, and then I was like, oh, Sam, like, this is also the book that kind of tells you more about Link, or tells you more about the items and shows you pictures of him and stuff like that. And so that's kind of how we got into it.
It's so interesting, the idea of, like, you know, because you are going into this with intent, right? You said you want to introduce him to the foundations of Legend of Zelda before you get to Breath of the Wild. And Breath of the Wild does do a lot of these things, or all of them, really. I mean, there's no, as far as I know, I don't think it came with any kind of guidebook.
No.
Breath of the Wild.
Not so out of necessity. I mean, I'm sure you could buy a very fancy, you know, strategy guide or something.
Sure, 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 sure.
Yeah.
But even the idea that, like, it's not even something that's just in the menu. I mean, that's what's so interesting about Breath of the Wild also, is it doesn't need any of this stuff because it's experiential, right? It is like the natural evolution and culmination of this world building discovery that even something like this provides. You went into that with intent, being like, okay, I want to showcase this. Is there a part of you that wishes that you had, like, I don't know, that wishes you were playing this on the Nintendo that has more of that physical component, or even of, like, of Super Mario Brothers? I'm sure you played it on the Switch, right? Rather than the non-ergonomic Nintendo controller.
I know. It's like you can play this game where you're actually getting stabbed by the sharp corners of the NES or whatever. I mean, there is something to that, but then there's also, like, I mean, sadly, there's just a feasibility problem. And I mean, maybe this is just me kind of, maybe this is me being sleep deprived and old or whatever, but some of those games, some of those emulations on the Switch, on the Switch Online service, they don't actually feel quite right to me. You know, like they feel good, but, like, not as snappy as I remember them. And it's like, well, you know, like, this is a digital representation of what was a partially analog game. You know, like, this was played on a CRT. This was played, you know, over an RF connection, not an HDMI. Like, there are differences. And so, but it's just not feasible for me to, like, buy a CRT TV anywhere in my house, you know, like have that. So I just kind of have made peace with, like, this is actually pretty close to what the setup was. And I'll just have to kind of, like, provide the context as we go.
Yeah. There is the Museum of Art and Digital Entertainment made, right, in Oakland that has some of these that you could, you know, physically go to.
Yes. Yeah.
And actually in Portland as well, there's a place very close to my house called Retro Game Bar. And it is a bar and they serve food. And it is just full of old retro games. Man, I haven't been yet. I did peek in and it was cool because, you know, they have walls and walls of video games that you can check out.
Yep.
And then pretty much any system of those bygone eras for you to actually play. Yep. You know, they had, like, Battletoads running and a few others just sort of lying around. But the idea of, like, you know, really taking it out. And I don't know. I mean, maybe there's even value in going to experience it when he's 10, you know, or, like, much older, and go, hey, remember how we played Link to the Past? Like, this is what I played it on. This is the way that it actually looked.
Exactly.
Previously.
And it does look different. I mean, like, I think one thing that we forget about the pixel art is that the nature of the television did make it smoother. You know, like, you didn't see the pixels as hard because of just the way that the TVs and the resolution was. And so Pixel Mario wasn't actually as pixely as you might remember him, as was Link. And so there are differences, and I think that could be cool to, like, but it would be much more of a museum experience because it's just not as feasible to do that anymore at home.
Yeah, yeah.
I might have gone to that same, when I went to Portland, I might have gone to that same bar or restaurant. Although, of course, like, you know, being Portland, I'm sure there was, like, at least, like, you know, 20 different retro barcades or
there's
whatever.
There's some cool, like, barcades, yeah, for sure.
But, like, things, you're right, though, like, things like Tempest, where it really does matter that you're seeing the kind of that you're seeing it on the right screen. You know, like, the glow of Tempest doesn't come across on a digital screen as it did, like, when you actually had, like, a, you know, phosphorus, you know, behind it. So, like, it's, yeah, that stuff is cool. And kind of trying to provide that context without killing the joy of actually playing the game is an interesting challenge.
Yeah, for sure. Looking back at the Internet Archive and some of these guides, are there any guides or games that stand out to you? I know we talked a little bit about the art being just super dope for some of these, like, old early 90s games. I mean, we mentioned Amano, who did a lot of the Final Fantasy art, but, you know, I called out, like, Tale of Fantasia, yep. having really cool, almost like Studio Ghibli style art yes. that you got in these extra guidebooks that you probably couldn't find anywhere else at the time. Yeah. Or even now, right? I mean, some of that art has probably been lost to the ages.
I mean, the one that I, of course, looked up that will not be a surprise to anyone is Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's so much cool Chrono Trigger. There's so many cool Chrono Trigger assets on archive.org because, you know, there's the similar to Legend of Zelda. I mean, it was of the same kind of system and era, but there's so much art around Chrono Trigger that wasn't in the game. And it's Toriyama art. So it's kind of like finding this long lost anime that never got produced, but was just there as a tone piece for this game.
Yeah.
And you can, and he drew specific scenes from the game where it's like, oh, here's Chrono and team fighting in the sewers. Here's that scene where they're fighting in the medieval world where you know, first meet Frog, like all like there are specific scenes that you can recognize. But there's just, it's just this like mysterious kind of like, wow, what else is out there? Like there's, these drawings are so painstakingly crafted. Like, could they be taken from something? You know, like, is there a secret movie that I don't know about? Like all of that stuff is like that stuff just really captured my imagination as a kid.
Yeah, that's kind of the wild thing too, right? Is when I look at like a modern open world game, I mean, maybe I guess besides Breath of the Wild, and there's fewer exceptions more and more so where people are hiding the UI, but there was an era, right, where the Far Cry method was just litter the map with everything.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like it was an attempt almost in a way to like put the guide on top of the world.
Yes. Yeah.
But I think it kind of misses the point of like, that's not really why you look at the guides.
Yeah.
You know, you're not really looking at the guides to know what to do next. It's more of that visual extension of the experience.
Yeah.
Because I was even looking at the opening of the Chrono Trigger guide. I'm looking at the Japanese version.
Yes.
And it has like all of the maps that you go. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you don't have the context, this is just pure wonder juice, you know? Yes. Like, this is just pure imagination of like, what is this weird desolate landscape?
Yeah.
You know, like, what's that all about? Like, you know, it sparks your imagination in a lot of the same ways, again, that like a D&D map can spark your imagination because you don't know what any singular location holds.
But in that era,
I never saw this as spoilers. Like, I never thought I'm spoiling the experience for myself. Although I'm sure I did. I definitely looked at boss fights before experiencing the boss fight. But
there's no part
of me. It's weird being in an age where I'm like, I will never buy a strategy guide ever again. It's pointless. That's crazy. I'm glad I don't have them in my house. But at the same time, I don't look down upon myself. And I have a lot of nostalgia for those physical components, you know?
I mean, I think I think it was just that combo of you are here. And I think it's not a coincidence that we keep referring to a lot of JRPGs here because it wasn't necessarily about the moment to moment plot, which sometimes was good, sometimes was not, you know, depending on how the story was and how the localization was. But all of those games held a certain interest because the worlds that they were building were unexpected and interesting and did capture your imagination. And that stuff is harder to spoil than a like plot by plot, you know, beat of like who's going to say what and when. And so to your point, like, and people, you know, there's like entire subreddits dedicated to like cool sci-fi or fantasy landscapes that are completely contrived and made up, but just are evocative of an emotion.
I mean, now AI are generating them. So.
I mean, they might as well be. I mean, I'm sure they are. But this was the precursor to that, which is like, oh man, like this is like a tone piece for this game that maybe isn't even representing a real thing in this game, but it's representing what this game is about, which is what we wanted to consume when we couldn't play the game.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. One quick call out for a game I'm just now looking at the strategy guide on archive.org. Do yourself a favor, everyone, and look up the Okami Breda Game Strategy Guide.
Oh my God.
So much awesome art.
It feels like Okami is like a throwback in that way, where like obviously the in-game visuals are amazing, but to get to that, they had so much concept stuff, you know, in the background to like set the tone for what they were doing.
I mean, like, I would get any of these tattooed on my body. Moagami, like the this koi fish Okami, like the sheep Okami version. Oh, so good.
Yeah. And there's like so much, you can see how they started to translate those concepts into a game in the same way that a lot of that like Final Fantasy or Chrono Trigger stuff got translated.
That's a great point. And it's in a guide, it is juxtaposed together. Like you will see like a boss fight screenshots because it's giving you the actual information you need, but then the concept art surrounds it or like overlaps with it. Yep. And you do get that sort of tone that they're going for in a way that I think is really insightful from a, like you're saying, from a design perspective, really, that you can't really get if you're not sort of juxtaposing those two experiences on top of one another.
Yeah. Anyway, that was what I was harassing my family with. Sam was interested, you know, and I'm trying to like kind of, because you don't want to force it. And like, I actually don't know if we're going to like finish, you know, Link to the Past. I mean, honestly, what I want to get as far as to, because at a certain point that game does a switcheroo on you and you go into the dark world, which is like a mirror of the map that you have been exploring. And so all of a sudden the map that you think you've explored has this whole other backside to it. And you realize everything is actually twice as big as you thought. And so I kind of
want to get to that moment.
I want to get to at least that moment to kind of like, because it is such a subversion of expectations, because that was, they had never done that in a Zelda game before.
Yeah, right.
And so just I want to
shake the boy. Oh my God, oh, Sam. Look at that. Do you see this shit?
You just turned into a pink bunny thing in this other mirror universe. You start
cranking the horn. Play Chrono Trigger. Like, he dies, Sam. He died. You're Frog now.
He was the main character. What? How crazy is that? But I mean, again, I don't want to push it too hard because like, it is fairly young to be introducing that stuff, and so you kind of have to like...
Yeah, five is pretty young, I guess.
But I think I appreciated having exposure to those games when I was probably a little bit too young for them. You know, like I think kids also like a challenge in a way, and so like I didn't want to lose that opportunity to do it before... You know, it's only a matter of time before he gets into something terrible like Roblox or Fortnite or something, right? Yeah, so I need to like get this in now before it happens.
I'm so curious, you know, even just as a reference point, right? Because it's not like he has to finish it per se, but to know in the back of his mind, this is a continuation, you know, this is like a through line or a story, not just of a character design, but of like the evolution or progression of video games, I think is something that could be really useful. I mean, hell, even if, look, fucking Goku's in Fortnite now. You know what I mean? So having any kind of pre-knowledge about what's come beforehand, not a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have knowledge of Goku. He shows up in the most unlikely of places.
Yeah, man. He's everywhere.
But yeah, I mean, I think I'll check in every once in a while. I'll kind of let you know how it goes. But
well, you're forging the path in front of me. You know what I mean? Like, I need to know all of the how it goes down. What are the next games? You know, what's after Breath of the Wild?
I mean, I really set myself up for failure with the Super Mario thing worked out so well that like nothing, I don't think anything can work out as well as that can. And so like, it's just kind of trying to like be mindful of what to introduce and when, because the Super Mario thing just worked flawlessly, like shockingly well. And so I've been chasing that for a while.
Okay. Here's what you do. Okay. You plan an evening where you, Hannah, Abby are out of the house, right? Late at night, 2 a.m. Without Sam knowing, right? You set an alarm and you go, Sam, wake up from like an Alexa device, right? He comes outside. There's some candles. He comes outside. It's dark, pitch black. None of the lights are working. The only outlet that works is to the television. And on the television, Demon Souls.
Oh, my God.
Bowl of fucking Czech cereal. Let him go.
Just Coca-Cola and Czech cereal and like and grind he will walk, for souls. Yes.
And he will walk outside of your house a man, Scott.
I mean, it's like no joke. Like, I hope one day, you know, when he gets over hating me as a teenager or whatever, like, I hope we can reconnect one day and play something like Bloodborne or Elden Ring or something and be like, wow, like this is really, you know, because it will be very similar to when we were playing A Link to the Past, except just, you know, the evolved version of it, you know. And like, I'm hoping that the reason why we hold those games in such high esteem is because they're good games, but they also are extremely knowledgeable about the, you know, the history that they're coming from. And so I want him to have that richness to it, because I think it actually does enhance the experience.
And the language that they speak. You know? Like there is, there's a linguistic component to it. Fascinating. Well, we'll check in fucking 15 years or whatever.
I mean, first I need to finish Elden Ring. So like, I think step one is just like,
well, maybe by the time he plays Elden Ring, you'll have just about finished it.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll be starting my first New Game Plus run at that
point. I'm excited for the Chrono Trigger days. Like when he's old enough to introduce, because I do think that some of those, Chrono Trigger included, those games could work for a younger kid. I mean, when he's, I don't know, like 12 maybe.
I mean, I think that's essentially when we were playing them, and there's nothing beyond that age. You know, there's nothing that would in those thematically that would be beyond that age range, I think. So like, and like that, I think that ties in with a lot of like books, you know, like YA style books and things. So I mean, it's almost scary in a way, because I don't want to do it wrong, because it would be such a tragedy if I did it wrong and he ended up, you know, having a bad experience with it. Like I almost, you know, I'm just very careful about it, you know?
Yeah. Especially when you introduce him to a new genre. You know?
Exactly.
Because who knows what happens if like his first experience with a JRPG,
like turn-based combat is like, well, what the hell is this? You know?
Yeah. Why is this garbage? Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Well, cool.
Okay. We'll leave it there. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is the website. If you want to find us on any podcast service, you probably can. Do us a favor. Tell a friend. Spread the word. Check out some of these manuals, these guides. Internet Archive. Archive.org.
Set aside an afternoon. Honestly,
a common one is really cool.
There's so many wacky ones. Like the Earthbound one has a bunch of like clay figures in it. Like it's just so wild. Like it's such a cool little project that they've been doing.
Super neat.
Cool. All right, everyone. As always, we thank you so much for listening, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Ciao.